If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Before I encountered the red rotary phone, the world was just a strange alien thing that went on every day outside the bounds of my existence. Everyone else got up at the crack of dawn, did their routines, and went out into the world, ready to socialize and succeed. Not me. I hated the very idea of routines. Slaving away at some job most of my waking life just sounded awful. Once I graduated, I did everything I could to work as an online freelancer, and I managed to create a meager existence for myself in a tiny rundown apartment in which I could free myself from any and all routines. No commute, no alarm clock, no brushing unless my teeth felt fuzzy. I could watch any show I wanted, online, whenever I wanted, and I could play any game I liked for hours on end. Best of all, I could sleep. Really sleep. Nobody else in the modern world got sleep like I did. They had to cut their scarce free time short and go to bed early. Then they had to wake up tired with an alarm clock screeching at them. Not me. My brain knew it had no scheduled interruptions, so I sank each night into a world of dreams that grew longer and more convincing with each passing month. I admit, I spiraled a little bit. I could feel it happening. I stopped going out, stopped talking to friends. Why bother? I was living for weeks inside dreams each night. By the time I woke up in the late afternoon or early evening, I'd sometimes have trouble remembering who any of my friends even were. It would only come back to me as I talked to them online and had my memories jogged. The longer I spent in those other realms, the more control I learned, and my lucidity was focused almost entirely on figuring out how to fly. Funny thing was, when I actually managed to pull it off for a few seconds at a time, all I wanted to do was to show the people around me. Dream people. Fake people. What did it matter if they cared? They weren't real. On top of that, they universally gave me the cold shoulder. They reacted to my levitation the way a waking person reacts to a car going by. A car would have shocked and amazed a medieval peasant, but not me. In the same vein, dream people shrugged and ignored my attempts to wow them with flight. Over time, that passive rejection brought out bitterness in my psyche. Flying was a thing all of waking humanity had dreamed about for thousands of years, and I was on the verge of mastering it, but none of the hollow people populating my dreams gave a shit. Subconsciously, I began pulling away from them too, and the realms I traveled became darker and lonelier. Instead of dreaming each night, I began to have nightmares instead. The geometry of each night's domain fragmented. Ordered cities became alleyway labyrinths. Open hills became fractal ravines. The people I encountered were few and far between, and themselves severely wary. They looked disheveled, hungry, and traumatized. They kept their distance from me and from each other, banding together only when the shapes emerged from the infinite nights on that land without a sun. It was during one of those endless, terrified runs that I encountered a red rotary phone. A grizzled old man and I were trapped in a fractal ravine that became too narrow to continue following, while a scintillating vortex of unseen limbs drifted in our direction. My amateur ability to fly would not get me away from something so enormous. And that was when I saw it. The phone was set into the raw rock of the ravine, as if someone had carved a little cubic niche just to hold it. Apprehensive in a whole new manner, I reached in, lifted the receiver, and brought it to my ear. The only way to describe the sensation emanating from that phone. Vast, cold, quiet emptiness. It felt as if I'd found a gap in the walls of the prison of my own awareness, and I put my ear close to listen to the limitless air beyond. Subtle static moved like wind. The crackling combined into sort of breathing. Someone was listening. For the first time that I'd ever experienced, I felt the presence of another aware mind in my dream. The grizzled old man whimpering and cowering behind me as the shape approached was not real, but this was. I didn't speak. A crushing sensation of fear kept me from thinking out loud. Still, I knew it was waiting. I could feel it. I dialed a number. I picked 4. The circling motion of the rotary dial didn't stop when I let go. It continued spinning backwards, accelerating, expanding, becoming a vortex of crimson rather than darkness. The abomination slithering down the ravine toward us grew distant as the dream world attenuated into a long and stretching tunnel, compressing at terrifying speed. Then, like a punch to the stomach, I woke and sat up in bed. Latent dizziness faded as I stared at the amber square on the wall from the evening sun shining through my window. That hadn't really happened, right? It had all been a part of my dream. It was ridiculous to think I'd actually connected to some sort of entity outside of my own mind that had woken me up because I dialed 4 on a rotary phone. I spared no thought for the grizzled old man I'd left to die alone. He wasn't real. As I got up, made coffee, and sat down at my computer, I realized that I could recall the night's dreams in perfect detail as if they'd really happened. The visual and tactile sensations were all startlingly vivid, and I could remember the fear and loneliness as more than just vague feelings. As I sat there thinking about it, I realized that the 4 I'd chosen hadn't just woken me up. It let me keep my dream memories, too. That meant the red rotary phone had simply not been a figment of my imagination. Trying to process the fact that I actually encountered something out there beyond myself, I rose restlessly. Those dark and fractured lands felt far too close for comfort. Normally, the fogginess of dreams served as a sort of emotional armor, but now I saw menace in every shadowed corner of my room. I had to go. I had to get out. The local gas station sold sodas at all hours, so that was usually where I went. Yes, that was a mundane goal that would make me feel better. It was my routine. First, I peered through my front window to make sure my neighbor Rick wasn't out there. I often ran into him at night, and talking to other people was the last thing I wanted to be doing late. As I warily emerged from the front door, the middle in a long row of similar doors from similar townhouses, I had the strangest feeling that I hadn't fully escaped my nightmare. A narrow band of purple on the horizon to my right promised that what light I still had would fade, and I took a deep breath of real air to reassure myself that a tentacled shape was not about to float into view over the roofs behind me. I stood and stared upward. There was no way something would actually appear, right? My heart began to beat painfully inside my ribcage. The open, cloudy darkness seemed full of threat. The labyrinthine street around me, flanked by tall and narrow buildings, reminded me very much of the fractal canyons. Was there a noise in the wind? A whisper. The door to my left opened abruptly. Rick stepped out, much to my simultaneous relief and annoyance. He came up with a big smile. Hey, bud. We both going to the gas station again? This guy's timing was insane. I masked my frustration, but only barely. Seems like it. Cool. Play any fun games tonight? I've been playing one of the new ones myself. I can't get enough. Wasn't it supposed to be impolite to talk to strangers? I'd never devised a way to get Rick to stop talking to me, so I just kept giving vague, generic responses as we walked. If I'd been able to pay attention to anything but his constant stream of consciousness blather, I might have seen the movement sooner. A shadow fell across us just as the last glimmer of purple vanished from the horizon. A massive gray hand closed around a nearby chimney, pulled the ethereal weight of something behind it, and then began grasping its way down the sloping roof. Behind it, a tentacle-bearing octopus-like suckers latched onto the side of a townhouse to drag itself along. It was a shape, trying to claw itself into the world. Rick saw me looking, so he turned and stared. For once, he stopped talking. I pushed him and he took the cue. We ran. The streets and alley of our city opened on a shifting series of lights, but without fail, darkness doused them before we could find safety. Neon shop signs flickered out and blue street lights dimmed. Rick pulled out his phone to light the way, but only barely. We fled down a trash-filled alley, only barely ahead of the grasping limbs above, and then we pushed into a space between buildings so narrow that the bricks grated away at both sides of us as we forced ourselves along. Halfway through, Rick couldn't push any further. The wall's vice-like grip held him fast. Panic hadn't truly set in until that moment. As long as the maze had offered another route, the animal inside me had put all of its hope into flight. Now, though, we were nearly cornered. I looked past Rick at the mindless gray fingers trying to push their way into our narrow space all along the edges of the buildings above. Then I turned my head the other way to evaluate my escape. I could do it. I could reach the other side and squeeze out into the open air. I could get away. Just like that old man I'd left behind in my nightmare, I could save myself at the expense of someone else. But that old man hadn't been real. He hadn't mattered to me. I didn't even like Rick, right? Why should it bother me? I did it. I made the decision in my heart to run away. I couldn't handle the panic, and I knew Rick was going to die horribly stuck here all alone in the night, but I wanted to live more than I wanted to fruitlessly try to save him. Directly in front of my face, the brick wall was inset with a red rotary phone. I couldn't be here. It wasn't possible. Tears in his eyes, Rick begged me to do something. Above, gray tentacles pushed their way past the hands and fingers, growing closer. I didn't help him. This wasn't real, right? That had to be what the existence of this red rotary phone here meant. I reached out and picked up the receiver. That vast expanse of barely audible static waited. I dialed 4 this time. I was prepared for the crimson vortex, the rushing... I dialed 4 this time. And this time, I was prepared for the crimson vortex, the rushing sensation, and then the punch to the gut. I was out. I was safe. The first thing I noticed was that I was overweight. My hair was brown, scraggly, and long. The skin on my hands and arms was dry. Old, but not too old. Also, I was a woman. to hell. Standing slowly on muscles maybe 10 or 20 years older than the ones I knew, I found myself in a kitchen. There were pictures on the fridge of a 40-something postal worker named Deborah who I vaguely recalled was me. Staggering outside into the blinding sun, I peered around at the neighborhood. There was a car on fire at the intersection. The driver was just a cinder-coated skeleton. The nearest yard had two kids in it, both lying down near a soccer ball. I limped over and checked. They were asleep. Their mom was snoozing on the front porch. Through the steamed-up window, I saw that their father had fallen face-first into a pot of boiling water on the stove. Now that I knew what to look for, I spotted many more neighbors and strangers asleep, some in their cars, some on the sidewalk. There was Deborah's daughter sleeping on a tricycle in the driveway. I saw a spilled soda that hadn't yet evaporated. Everyone on the planet had fallen asleep, and it had only happened recently. Foggy memories tried to reach me through the receding veil of waking. Deborah knew what was happening to the world. She felt the pull on our mind. It was a network. Cell phones, the internet, the power grid, our very dreams. We'd even had warning that the brine was emerging, but what could we do? Stop thinking? And yet I'd escaped it. I pulled myself away from other people so hard that I'd actually managed to extricate myself into the web of minds. I would stay here. It was safe from the shape now and from any other nightmare. In fact, even better. I was safe from other people here. The entire rest of the human race was asleep. It was just me. I sat on the steps to my house, idly studying Deborah's daughter as she lay bent over the handlebars of her tricycle. If I stayed here, though, I'd have to watch them all die. I could theoretically make a few of them drink and eat, but this would be a world full of corpses in a few days, and I'd left an old man to die in a nightmare canyon. I'd left Rick to die stuck in a narrow alley, and I would have to leave Deborah's daughter to die on a tricycle. That was going to happen regardless, sure. But if I rejoined the sleepers, I would experience time at the same rate they did. I lived my entire new life in the seconds since everyone had fallen asleep, which meant we would all have countless years together before we starved or died of exposure. The real world, ultimately, was far more temporary than the dream we'd forged together. Still, I almost stayed. It was only a single notion that tilted the scales. I'd never been able to avoid Rick, no matter how hard I tried. Wherever I went, there he was, needy, talkative, and relentlessly positive. Sitting and watching my sleeping daughter, I understood. Going back into Deborah's house, my house, I lay in bed and closed my eyes. Falling asleep felt like diving into a pool of warm black oil. I dove down, holding my breath, but without lungs. I fought the terror of the deep to keep swimming straight into the depths until I surfaced back in the alley next to Rick. The red rotary phone was gone, and I was myself again. Worse, gray tentacles were nearly about to reach us. There was a way out of this, one that I would have never considered before. For the first time in years, I summoned other people on purpose. Help! I turned my head and shouted even louder. Help us! Why had I always tried to run away by myself? It seemed foolish now that I could see for what it was. Somebody, please help us! A dog began barking. Down the alley, I saw a light turn on in a window. Rick started screaming too. A man appeared at the end of the alley and looked our way in shock. "What the hell is that?" He pulled out his phone and aimed it toward the film at the shape, but it was the light that slowed it. I shouted, "Your light! Turn it brighter!" He did so quickly and waved another man over. In short order, several people emerged to shine flashlights and cell phones up at the shape, which retracted in whispered growls and pained retreat. It wasn't dead. Not by a long shot, but the sounds of sirens in the distance meant that civilization at large would take it from here. We inched our way back out of the alley, away from the gathered crowd, until we burst free into an open space. "That was crazy, man," Rick gasped. "I didn't think you were coming back for me." "Coming back?" I scanned the alley behind us, seeing no sign of the red rotary phone's alcove. "You could tell that I left? Where did I go?" He blinked a few times, confusion darkening his features. I don't know, actually. I just felt you leave for a split second, and I got scared." I nodded. "It's okay. I'm back now." I was pretty sure Rick was actually asleep on a tricycle in our driveway. I was also pretty sure, for the first time in this life, that this person here beside me was real. "Let's go home. You should tell me more about that game you're playing." "Really? Awesome. Well, it's like this," he continued his excited chatter while we walked. I listened intently and studied the streets around us, and the city came alive in response to the shape floating in the sky. There were kids riding bikes and yelling. Police began packing cars to leave, while others drove in just to see it. A grizzled old man sat on a bench across the street, unafraid. There was no way to know if the air I was breathing was real, but the people there were actually here. I'm writing this. You're reading this. You're real. I'm real. I connect with you at vast distances and transmit ideas straight to your thoughts with these words. I found the connections for years, trying to bitterly separate myself, but that isn't how things work anymore. We are all neurons.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
My sister's the one that told me about Killbus. It was a stupid name for what was going to be a silly ghost story, but Vicky was excited about it, and we both gotten old enough that the times that we actually talked without fighting were few and far between. When I first asked her where she was going that night, on a weekend when our parents were away and we were both supposed to be staying home, I was doing it just to fuck with her. I wasn't going to tattle on her for going out with her boyfriend, and she knew that, but the power the secret gave me was too much to resist. Usually she'd just have threatened me or called me a booger and coughed up part of her weekend allowance, but this time she didn't do either. Instead, she looked around at me, her eyes bright and dancing, and said her and Tim were going with some of his friends to find the kill bus. And when I asked her what the hell that was, she actually grinned and started to tell me. There are a couple of different versions of the story. The one Tim heard was that the bus had originally been a real bus carrying a load of criminally insane killers from an old closing institution to its new replacement. One of its inmates got free, caused the bus to crash and burn, killing everyone inside of it. After that, a ghost bus came back, haunting lonely roads all over the country. It's lame, right? The other version, the version I found yesterday on the internet, was that it wasn't a bus at all, at least not originally. It used to be a horse-drawn carriage, and before that, some kind of giant beast that roamed the lands and looked for people that crossed its path. That version made it sound less like a ghost, and more like some kind of animal that just evolved over time to fit what people were used to and understood. Maybe so it could trick them easier. Because that's what it does. It drives around on quiet roads at night. Supposedly, you don't see it if you're in a car yourself. You have to be out on foot, like you're hitchhiking, I guess. Even then, your odds of seeing it are super slim. I don't know if there's only one of them or not, but it's not like they're everywhere or even common, and it's not like some ghost story where you have to be a specific place and do a specific thing. The kill bus is always moving, going from place to place and never staying still for too long. I frowned at her. Then why are you guys going out to look for it? Going to stand out in the dark like dumbasses for a few hours? Good luck with that. Vicky's expression darkened slightly, but she rolled her eyes and went on. A, we're going to be partying while we wait. B, Tim wants to do it. And C, Tim's friend Jeff, I actually saw it a few nights ago. My eyes widened slightly. You're drinking tonight? I'm gonna need an extra 20 for that. She glared at me. Bullshit. I shook my head. Bullshit nothing. They find out you not only snuck out and went boozing with Tim and his sketch friends, I'll catch a ton of shit for not ratting you out. I smirked at her. Gotta make it worth my while. Grimacing, she nodded. Fine, you little turd. She pulled out her phone and checked herself in the camera. But remember, if they call, I'm just asleep. Vicky smiled slightly into the phone. That's Tim. He's pulling up outside. She was turning to leave when I stopped her. Vic, why do they call it the kill bus? Some of her prior excitement and good cheer was back when she looked at me and smiled. I don't know, Tumble. I guess if it gets you, it kills you. She stretched her face into a macabre scowl before laughing and heading for the door. Back before midnight, probably. But she wasn't. She didn't come home by midnight, or one, or two, and when I woke up the next morning, she still wasn't home. I tried her cell phone, but there was no answer. I weighed calling our parents, but decided I'd give her till noon. If she didn't show up by then, I'd have to tell, rat or no rat. It was about 11:30 when I heard the door open and Vicky walked in. I knew something wasn't right immediately. My first thought was that she'd been in an accident or fight. Her clothes were torn and dirty, and she had a blank look on her face that reminded me of videos I'd seen of people that were in shock. I asked her if she was okay, but she ignored me, moving slowly, almost haltingly, over to Mom's recliner and sitting down. Vic, what the hell? Are you sick or something? She blinked at that and looked over in my direction. The lack of recognition scared me worse than the dirt on her jeans or the blood on her elbow. Vicky, I'm calling 911. You need a doctor or something. I started to get up from the sofa when she raised her hand. No, don't do that. I don't need help. Her voice was dry and hoarse sounding, so raw that it hurt to hear it. She was at least meeting my eyes now. I stared at her. You look like you do. Do you know who I am? She smiled a little. Of course. You're Tumble. I smiled back, slightly relieved. My name is Terry, but since I was little, Vicky and sometimes our parents would call me Terry Tumbleweed, or Tumble for short. It was apparently from when I was a toddler, I would always follow my big sister around, and somehow they started saying I just went wherever she went, like a little tumbleweed. It never really made sense to me, but it stuck, and this was the one time when I was glad it had. If she remembered that, she remembered me, and maybe that meant she wasn't that hurt after all. I still got up from the sofa and moved toward her, though. Crouching down beside her, I gently put my hand on her arm. What happened to you? Do you remember? I felt her stiffen under my fingers as her bottom lip began to tremble.
I think so.
My stomach was turning to ice now. This was something bad. It had to be for her acting like this. A new thought crept into my mind as the cold in my belly slid up to my chest. Did someone hurt you? Like, did someone do something to you? When she looked at me, a tear slid down her left cheek. I dreaded what she was about to say. She was going to confirm it, and who the fuck hurt my... Was it Tim? Was it fucking Tim or one of his stupid buddies? I'd fucking... No. Not like how you mean. I sucked in a relieved breath. Oh, well, shit. What then? Can you tell me? When she just sat silently staring at me, softly crying for another few moments, I added, "You were going out to find the kill bus, remember?" Another shudder from her, and then a small nod. Oh, yeah. We found it. I stared at her, unable to hide my confusion and disbelief. You found it? You found the ghost bus? She looked away, her cheek jumping slightly as she shook her head.
No. Not a ghost. It's very real. We went out. Tim took us out all the back roads. Me, Jeff, and Jeff's sister, Bethany. She's home from college right now. I don't know exactly where, but we parked and got out. We drank a little, danced to the radio, but nothing happened. No bus or anything. I think Jeff and Beth wanted to go back into town, but Tim was mad. He wanted to find the thing. So we all split up. The plan was that he was going to drop us all off about a mile apart. We'd wait outside for like 30 minutes, then he'd come pick us all back up. I didn't like that, and neither did they, but Tim was insistent, so we gave in. Oh, God. Vicky wiped her nose with the back of her hand. She was shaking more now, but her voice grew stronger as she sank into the rhythm of telling me what happened. He dropped me off last. He said he was going to park and wait alone up the road a ways. He gave me a flashlight, but it didn't help much. It was still cold and dark and spooky being out on that road all alone. I was only out there a few minutes when I saw headlights coming toward me. I thought it was Tim. That he'd circled back around, but it wasn't. It was the bus. When I started school, when you were still a baby, I went to this preschool, right? I don't remember what it was called, but it had this cartoon raccoon on the side of the van that picked the kids up. It wasn't a good place. The people that ran it were mean to the kids. Scary, mean. It got so bad. I was terrified when I saw that van pull up, saw that grinning raccoon staring out at me. I was little, so I don't remember the name, but I always remembered that raccoon. The kill bus was like one of those old school buses we used to have with the flat front. Instead of yellow paint, it was a dead, pale gray, and instead of words saying what school it belonged to, it just had that fucking raccoon painted on the side of it, staring out at me and laughing. I think a part of me knew that it wasn't possible, and none of it was right, that I needed to be running away, not walking closer when the door squealed open, but that part of me seemed very quiet and far away. I thought I could hear music coming from the inside of the bus, but it was so faint that I wanted to get closer to hear it better. I reached the doorway. The inside was dimly lit, and from there I could see the four steps up to the leather seat behind the big steering wheel. Everything was covered in moisture, like steam or sweat or dew, and I found myself wondering where the driver had gone. Despite the strangeness of it all, I was still about to step up into the bus. My hand was already grabbing the edge of the door, but that's when I realized what I was feeling. Not painted metal, rubber, or chrome, but something indefinably different. Hard, but not yet unyielding. Warm and almost alive. I pulled back as I looked over the outer wall of the bus where my hand had been. Up close, I could see it wasn't painted metal at all. It was scales. Scales the color of a storm cloud that seemed to drink in the light from my flashlight without any real reflection at all. I had the funny and scary idea that I was standing next to a dragon, and then the thought fled as I heard someone speaking to me. "Getting on, miss?" Sucking in a breath, I turned to look at the bespectacled man leaning out to look at me from around the corner of the bus's center aisle. He was wearing a uniform, which I guess made him the bus driver, and he was smiling at me, his eyes friendly and curious behind his thick, owl-like glasses. "I need to be moving on soon, but I'm happy to let you on if you like." Again, that small voice screamed at me to stop, but it seemed tiny and silly now. This was just a bus, a magical bus maybe, but still just a nice bus with a nice man. And if it was a magical bus, wasn't that all the more reason to go and see it? Find out where that music was coming from. When would I ever get another chance like this? Telling it now, I see how insane that all is. But with him smiling at me and that music playing, it made all the sense in the world. So I stepped onto the bus and the door slid closed behind me. It was as I climbed the last of the steps to the floor that I realized how bad I'd messed up. I could see the rest of the man now. He wasn't a man at all. He had no legs. His lower half just trailed away from his shirt and vest, the part that had been visible before I got on. It turned into a thick, ropey cord of red meat that writhed back 15 feet or so before heading down. That first 15 feet ran between things that at first glance looked like bus seats, old-fashioned ones of vinyl and steel, but when you really looked at them, you saw maybe they weren't that at all. Maybe the metal was the ashy bones of something's teeth, and the vinyl was just skin that had been stretched tight or caught there from some prior meal. I know that sounds strange, but it all makes sense when you're there. Because you're not in a bus, you see. You're in the mouth of whatever the kill bus really is. Past those first few seats that weren't seats, the man that wasn't a man, everything trailed downward, farther down than the bus or the ground should have allowed, down a longer mouth filled with hooked teeth and whipping tongues that became a throat filled with jagged edges and green flittering lights as they went on and on down into the dark. I met the eyes of the driver, and his smile wasn't friendly anymore. And when he shot out a hand and grabbed me, I screamed in pain and fear, not just from how much his grip burned and ached, but because he was pulling me down into the belly of that thing. Nikki's eyes were free-flowing with tears now, and she couldn't look at me as she went on. I think it's like a shark. Like you can see the fin, right? Except at a distance, maybe it blends in with the water, or it looks like a wave. And even if you do get close enough to see, you aren't seeing the whole thing. You aren't seeing the monster underneath. She shuddered. I think it ate me. I think it pokes its mouth into our world and finds people alone, and it eats them. I think that's what it did to me. Puffing out a long breath, she wiped at her eyes. I know how that all sounds, and I don't remember anything after that thing put its hands on me, not really, just like a memory of a dream, you know? But I think it pulled me down into its belly, and its belly was filled with music that wasn't music at all. It was screams, and it ate me right up, melted me down to nothing. She did turn to me now, her eyes wide and pleading. But that can't be right, can it? Because I'm right here. Glancing around, she grabbed my arm and gave it a squeeze. Aren't I? I tried to comfort her as best I could, but that just looked like me reassuring her that yes, she was herself, and yes, she was home. After a few minutes, she said she was very tired and wanted to go sleep a while. I thought about trying to push the issue to find out something from her that actually made sense, ask her if any of the others had seen anything or how she'd even gotten home, but I didn't have the stomach for it. She was too upset. And maybe after she woke up, she'd be able to see things more clearly. She slept the rest of that afternoon, and by that evening, I was falling asleep myself. Heading to my room, I set the alarm for 8 o'clock. A couple of hours for a nap, and then I'd wake Vicky and figure out what to do next. I had strange dreams, and when I woke up, it was from a nightmare where a giant anglerfish was chasing me through some endless murky deep. Everything was quiet, and there were still 12 minutes until my alarm was set to go off. I thought about going back to sleep, but the distant squeaking noise caught my attention. A squeak, and then a bang. Squeak, and bang. The image of the kitchen screen door blowing in the wind came to mind, though it was strange I'd hear it from so far away. Still groggy, I got up and headed for the kitchen. I saw why I'd heard the noise so clearly. The door leading to the outside was wide open, making the sound of the gently banging screen door carry throughout the house. Frowning, I headed to the door and started to shut it when I realized our parents' car was outside. They'd made it home. I almost turned around to go find them, already starting to form some version of what I could tell them about what Vicky had told me, some version that wouldn't freak them out while still letting them know that something was very, very wrong. But what was next to the car? Turning on the outside light, the dark streaks leading away from the concrete and into the grass jumped into color. Dark red smeared into a puddle before heading off in a trail. Was that blood? It was near the passenger side door, and a few feet farther back, there was another larger pool and a smear that also led off across the grass. Heart thudding, I pictured someone attacking my mother as she got out of the car, attacking her and then my father as he came around to try and help, hurting them badly and dragging them off to... where?
My eyes followed the invisible trajectory of the blood trails out into the dark, and far away down the road, and partially obscured by trees, I could make out red taillights and a hulking black shape out there in the night. It looked like a large bus. Hi, Tumble. I turned as the knife plunged toward me, and that moment made the blade go into my shoulder instead of the side of my neck. Vicky was already trying to pull it free as I let out a squeal of pain, but it took her two tugs, which gave me enough time to get my hands up and shove her away even as I stumbled backwards toward the door. I slammed it shut a moment before she hit the other side, the initial body blow followed by several scraping hits as she raked the knife across the wood. Let me in, Tumble. Let me take you to Mom and Dad. Let me take you all for a ride. No, no, you're crazy. Stay away. She snickered on the other side of the door. You sound scared, Tumble. No need to be scared. Just let me show it to you. There's so much of it, and you need to see it. It's really something. Crying, I beat my fist against the door in a mixture of anger and fear and despair. No, just go away. Just go. I can't just leave my baby brother. A shrill sound pierced the night. I thought it might be a bird's cry at first, maybe the screech of an owl, though I never heard one to compare. When it blew again, I realized I was wrong. It was the bus blowing its horn. Sorry, Tumble. I guess I have to go for now. I felt a shudder of relief, though I knew I couldn't trust anything she said. She might go and try to get in another way. I let out a scream as she slammed against the door again. But don't worry, I'll come back for you someday. Wherever you go, I'll always find my little tumbleweed. I got the cordless phone and locked myself in the bathroom. She never tried to get in, and when the cops arrived, they didn't find any signs of her. I was questioned constantly for the next few days. Her parents were gone, and the blood definitely pointed to something happening to them. That, combined with my sister and her friends having disappeared, and my crazy story, made them wonder if I hadn't just gone on some kind of demented killing spree. But that's when they started getting reports from other places. Vicky's boyfriend, Tim, had a best friend that lived in Louisiana. He'd gone missing 3 days after I'd called the police. And Jeff and Bethany's mother? They tracked her down to where she was stationed overseas. Germany, I think. Except when they found where she was supposed to be, she wasn't there. In all of the years since, I've never gotten any answers. No one was ever found, and I'm no closer to knowing what really took my family now than I was the night it all happened. For a long time, that bothered me, but eventually, I began to see it as a blessing. A way of, if not forgetting all the fear and pain, at least moving past it. And for the last few years, I've felt less haunted by it. Past few nights, I keep waking up, not in bed, but outside. I knew right away something was wrong. I'd never sleepwalked before, and I lived my life very carefully. I never go out alone after dark and keep my doors double locked at night. All the windows are nailed shut, and I even put a chair against the knob of my bedroom door. The idea that I would navigate all that in my sleep to stand out barefoot in the cold? It seems unlikely, but that just makes it more troubling. What's worse is that last night as I woke up in freezing ankle-deep ditch water just 5 feet from the road, I thought I could hear something in the distance. Faint and fragile on the chilly air, I could almost make out parts of a song. And in spite of everything, a part of me wanted to hear more.
I loved my family, especially Vicky, and I'm sorry for what happened to them. I miss them and mourn them every day, but the thing that keeps me awake now isn't my guilt or my grief. It isn't even my fear that my sister is finally making good on her promise to find me again. It's the whisper in my heart that says when the kill bus finally comes around again, I'll be ready. When the music plays, I'll come running. And when Vicky reaches out her hand and asks me if I want to come aboard, I'm afraid I'll say yes.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters. And what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.